Welcome to the Marketplace Roundtable. I'm Daniel Schwartzman of Shortman Studios. In this special edition, Jay Mintzmyer, author of Value Investor's Edge, revisits the container ship trade that we discussed on a podcast in February. Spoiler alert, it's playing out very well, but Jay thinks the fundamentals continue to line up for longs here. Bouncing off a recent article Jay posted on Seeking Alpha, we discuss the trade, misconceptions around it, how to value these companies, and what his favorite names are. It's a good conversation if you're looking for ideas or just ways to think about a sector. Before we begin, nothing on this podcast should be taken as investment advice of any sort. We disclose our positions at the end of this podcast. Check out Jay's work on Seeking Alpha by searching for Jay Mintzmyer, that's Mintzmyer, or Value Investor's Edge. Subscribe to this podcast wherever you get podcasts. Okay, here we go. Welcome to the Marketplace Roundtable Special Edition. Today, I am speaking with Jay Mintzmyer, the author of Value Investor's Edge, the well-known shipping expert on Seeking Alpha, and has been on the site for a decade now, I think. I'm Daniel Schwartzman. Jay, how are you doing today?
Doing great, Daniel. Yeah, it actually will be 10 years that I've been on Seeking Alpha. I think my anniversary is late July of this year. So, wow, I wasn't even thinking about it, but I'm glad you mentioned it because it's been a great ride.
Yeah, I seem to remember the early days, a little bit more Best Buy and Intel, but you've got the shipping focus now, as everybody knows. And we talked in February when we were talking about container ships. And at the time, it was one of those things where you're throwing out names like Danaus and NMCI, which had 5X, 6X, huge numbers. And whenever you come into a run like that, it feels like we're at the end of the line and, you know, there might be a little bit less to squeeze out, but it's got to be late. And then as you're preparing for this, I noticed you just wrote up those names again. Most of them have more or less doubled in the last 3 or 4 months. So catch us up on what's going on. And we'll start with container ships. What's going on there? I mean, it seems like it's been quite a year, quite a 9 months, whatever you want to put it. What are you seeing there?
Yeah, certainly, Daniel. Yeah, it's been a while since we talked. If I recall correctly, it was early to mid-February. And you're totally right. We came into this thing and we were talking about five baggers and six baggers. And the two companies that you mentioned were Danaus Corp, DAC, of which I had a long position then. I also still have a long position now. And Navios Containers, NMCI, which ended up merging into Navios Partners, NMM. So a little bit of merger stuff there. But yeah, I'm still long that position. And, you know, it's really interesting because the stocks have appreciated at blistering paces. But the underlying valuations of the stocks have went up even faster. You know, I don't think I've ever seen something like this personally in my life, at least, or in my investment life, where the stock keeps going up. And I mean, Danaus Corp is, as we're talking today, I should remind folks, it's the 14th of June. We're recording here in the morning. It's about, you know, 11 o'clock in the morning. And Danaus Corp's like $74 a share. And that stock last fall was $5 or $6. So, you know, public math, embarrass myself here, but that's like a 14 bagger. And you look at that thing and you're like, my God, like I missed the train. I missed the boat and, you know, I'm going to stuck over here and, you know, the rocket's almost to the moon and I'm still on Earth. But then you dig under it and you look at the valuations and you look at the price to NAV. You look at the price to future, like forward earnings. You look at the enterprise value to EV, to EBITDA and you say, wow, it's actually almost just as cheap, in some cases cheaper at $74 than it was at 10 last fall. And that's just bewildering. And it's hard to believe that. So that's kind of where we're at, Daniel, in the stocks. In terms of the market, it has exceeded my wildest expectations. And I'm like, I've been in shipping for about 10, almost 11 years now. And, you know, shipping's a volatile industry. It's higher risk on average. Things are roller coaster at times. But it always surprises you, right? And it always seems to shock you. But in the last decade, it has almost always seemed to surprise people in the negative way. It's always been worse than we thought it would be, or the downturn was longer than we thought it would be. And now it's the opposite. These rates are at all-time record highs. And not only are the rates themselves there, the durations of these rates are exceeding. Like I think last time we talked, Daniel, I was saying, you know, you can get this for a year or you can get 2 years. Daniel, now we're talking 4 to 5 years on these rates. It's just phenomenal.
Which obviously means, you know, we're going to get into questions, I guess, about peak cycle, about cyclical valuations and all that sort of. I think that's what everybody looks at is the downside. But the article you just wrote, I thought was interesting because you did a nice job. You know, I think you pounded the table again on the names you like. GSL, I think, was the other one that you called out along with Danaos. But you also tackled what you call 5 myths about this as far as stocks falling rates, as far as this just being temporary, and a few other ones. And I guess you've been pitching, obviously, you've been talking shipping for a long time, like you said. And there are times where you get excited about the industry. And so you're out there telling people about it. And generalists like myself kind of look at shipping as a, at best, as a hard to understand what's inside the box, what's inside the container industry. And I'm curious what you find, like, as you hear misconceptions from other investors, like, what's most frustrating to you right now as you're sitting here with that setup that you just mentioned? What are you sort of working through as far as how to explain to people what you see as a real opportunity here?
Yeah, no, Daniel, I appreciate you, you know, the kind words about the report. And, you know, there's, it's definitely a little lengthy. So I, you know, if it took a few times to read through it, I wouldn't blame you. It's, I like to keep my articles usually a little bit shorter, but this one, there was just a lot to talk about. And it had been a long time since we updated. I encourage folks, if you haven't read it yet, head over to Seeking Alpha. You can search DAC, Danaos Corp, and it'll bring up the article. It's not just about Danaos Corp, it's about the entire container ship industry, but that's kind of the feature stock that I'm long. And then another one is Global Ship Lease, GSL. So I should mention again, folks, a recording on the 14th of June. So like if you're listening to this recording on a later date, keep in mind, I have options positions as well. So those can change and those are just housekeeping and rolls from month to month and things like that. So just keep in mind, I have a long position and I'm trading. I want that disclosure to be very clear for everybody on both the Danaos Corp and Global Ship Lease. All that said, take a look at the article and it'll make more sense to you. But there's 5 misconceptions that I bring up in this report. And the first one we kind of already touched on. It's that the stocks are more expensive now. And I walk through with a math and I illustrate the enterprise value. I illustrate the NAV and I show that if anything, the stock is cheaper today, which is just like baffling. Like how the hell is a stock at $74 cheaper than a stock at $10? And I walk through it and I explain that. And just a quick analogy to explain that is think about owning a house. When you buy a house, you don't put, you know, let's say it's a $500,000 or $600,000 house. Very few people put $500,000 or $600,000 down, right? They put $50,000 as a down payment or something, or maybe it's 20%, maybe it's $100,000 down. And that $100,000 is your equity in the house, right? And the rest of the $400,000-$500,000 is debt. And so you don't say, I spent $100,000 on a house. Like nobody would say that. They would say I bought a $500,000 or $600,000 house. Well, when it comes to stocks, people seem to kind of lose the tracking on that. And they only look at the stock price, which is the equity in the house. And they kind of forget that there's an entire enterprise, an entire business they're buying. And so that's once you wrap your head around that analogy and the net debt and how that plays in, and the fact that Danaos Corp is rapidly paying down debt and drowning in cash flow, it starts to make more sense. So that's the first one, Daniel. I'll highlight the next four, and then maybe we can move on because I don't want to be too long-winded of an answer. But the second one is that rates are temporary and they're only due to like some sort of temporary COVID disruption. It's way more complex than that. We're in the middle of a multi-year cyclical upturn that started in late 2019. It had already started, then COVID hit. The third misconception, and I think this is probably the one we can unpack the most in the follow-up, is that shipping stocks always follow the rates. That's not really true. That's more of a recent phenomenon, and we can talk about that more. The fourth misconception is that shareholder returns won't be strong. Not only is that not currently true, it's not historically true. Historically, these stocks have paid excellent dividends when times are good. And the final misconception is that these owners are all irresponsible and they're just going to blow the cash on new builds or all going to go bankrupt or something. That's not really what happened last time. There's misconceptions on that. And also, if we're paralleling this to 2007, 2008, the stock valuations were completely different. And we can maybe unpack that a little bit more as well. So thanks for the question, Daniel. And I'm excited to talk about this because this is probably the biggest report I've put out in, I would say, probably a couple of years now.
So yeah, let's unpack some of those. Before we get to the stocks falling rates, I first wanted to ask, could you spell out a little bit? I thought it was what you did with Danaos and explaining, I wasn't aware that they had a stake in another company and that's a nice hidden asset or other sort of story that kind of explains away some of the what's going on there. Could you just touch on that quickly? Because I think that's an interesting angle there.
Yeah, of course. They have, it was a little bit over 10% stake, and now it's a little bit over 8%. They took a little bit off the table. They own 8% or so in Zim Integrated Shipping, stock symbol ZIM. I'm also long Zim. I'm also pretty bullish about that company. But with Zim is a liner company. So that's the company that Danaos would rent their ships to. And there's about 10 major liner companies in the world, and Zim's one of the smaller ones. They got those shares way back when, I think it was 2013 or 2014, as a result of a previous restructuring. Right after the global financial crisis, there's a huge downturn, right? And some of the liners had to restructure. And Danaos Corp had, you know, charters out to Zim. And Danaos Corp said, hey, we're going to work with you. You're going to go through this restructuring. We'll cut the charters down a little bit for, you know, a few years. But in exchange, we want a bunch of debt and we want 10% of your company. And at the time, you know, it was kind of a pioneering deal. It was kind of bold, if you will. And now we look at it 6 or 7 years later, and my goodness, what a brilliant, beautiful deal. Danaos gave up charters, in my opinion, that were worth about $100 million. And they ended up with an equity stake in Zim that is worth $400+ million. So they like quadrupled their money on that restructuring deal. Oh, and by the way, Zim just repaid all the debt that they had given them as well. They repaid it 2 years early. They're doing so good. They're making so much cash that they just looked at their balance sheet and said, hey, we got this 2023 debt out there. Well, it's a little high cost. Let's repay it.
That's a pretty big win for, well, in that case, both companies, but for Danaos in general. So on the COVID issue then, because you talk a lot about the setup here. And I think it's interesting to, not to push back, but to question about, we know in the last 3 months, I mean, I think we talked about a month or two before the Suez Canal crisis, the liner getting stuck there. We talked before the real meme about transitory inflation and about supply shortages. I mean, I think semiconductors were already in shortage when we talked last, but there's still a feeling of, we just had a once in a hopefully 100-year event that really disrupted how things work. We're coming out of that, which is a once in a 100-year event. And so supply chains are still sort of adjusting, figuring it out, sorting things left and right. And so it would seem like that would cause some degree of elevation, even if we're largely past the period of quarantine, excessive quarantines and that sort of bottleneck. What do you, your piece, I think, talked a little bit more, my sense was about the quarantining sort of COVID effect. What do you make about just that sort of, from an economic standpoint, then the backlogs are a big problem for the global economy, which for now is a big plus for rates. Like, what do you make about that element?
Well, that's exactly right, Daniel. So I apologize if I didn't want to misspeak or anything like that. But yeah, what I was talking about when I'm saying it's not due to COVID is it's not, you know, some sort of temporary phenomenon that's just due to, you know, quarantines or sick dock workers or, you know, there's this one news story that gets passed around and around and around, and it's kind of interesting, but it's about this fleet backup at LA and Long Beach and how there's, you know, 30 container ships and they're docked off, you know, there. And Oakland had, I think, 17 container ships or something like that. So there's like this story that goes around and around, and I've seen a lot of pushback, and they're like, well, this is only due to the 30 vessels that are backed up outside Long Beach and totally temporary bottleneck, and it's going to be gone next month. And, you know, I even saw a guy on Twitter today, again, June 14th. And, you know, he's like, I'm going to short all these container ships because these rates are known and this is temporary. And, you know, like I did like a at remind me in 6 months thing on the tweet, and, you know, like, good luck, dude. Like, you know, the market, there's buyers and sellers, like nothing personal or nothing. Like, you know, you can be long and short, you know, there's nothing wrong with that, but that's so big of a misconception of what's really going on here. So what is going on is two parts. The first part is that container ships are a cyclical industry, multi-year upturn, multi-year downturn. We had a multi-year upturn from 2001 all the way through 2008, all the way through like even into like September, October. And that upturn was mostly due to China joining the WTO and US, China, Europe, Asia trade, both those trade routes exploding. And what happened was we had the global financial crisis, right? Everyone remembers that. And then we had this massive order book, and we're talking 60, 70% of the fleet was on order. I mean, that's enormous. Hard to even like fathom how big an order book that was. And that order book hit right after the GFC. And then you had almost a decade of downturn. Well, because the rates were so terrible from about 2012 to 2018, the rates were terrible. Nobody was really ordering ships. There was a little bit of, you know, fleet renewal and large vessels, but the order book was very small. In fact, it hit all-time record lows last year. Between 2016 and 2020, it was basically record lows on the order book. And so you had 6 to 7 years of underinvestment in new container tonnage. Well, at the same time, the global economy was kind of humming along. Well, you know, you get to Q2, Q3 of 2019, and we finally turned the corner and we're on a major cyclical recovery. At the end of 2019, Daniel, some of those eco vessels, like I'm thinking like 9,000, 10,000 TEU eco ships, modern designs, they were in contract, like in negotiations or rumored negotiations for 4 to 5 year deals at $40,000 to $50,000 a day, which is actually not that far below what they're signing on those ships on today. So, you know, these rates didn't just come out of nowhere. Like they were already starting to happen before COVID. So that's the first part. The second part is COVID. Yes, you had a huge supply disruption. And the disruption was for 3 or 4 months where tonnage dropped by 30, 40%. Now the entire global supply chain, I'm talking ports, rail traffic, trucks, forklifts and stores, like every little chink and chain of the global supply chain is maximized right now. Everything is humming at full speed and they still cannot keep up. I mean, you're looking at these global inventory levels to sales and they're well below the five-year average. In fact, they're basically five-year lows. And when you have those inventory levels at that pace, it means stores like Home Depot and Walmart and Amazon and Target need to restock their distribution centers, need to restock their stores. And so they're all placing orders. And the global system simply cannot keep up. And it's not about LA and Long Beach. Like that's like one out of 55 things that's going on out there. So that's what I mean by that, Daniel. I know a long answer, but it's two things. It's a cyclical upturn and it's a global disruption. It's not some sort of like niche one-off COVID thing.
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, I think that's, people are going to, as you mentioned, they're going to look at that and they're going to try to, I think we see a line like a Danaus chart and we try to explain it away because it just doesn't, even if Amazon is flat over the last 9 or 10 months. And so if you see a company like that and then you see a container ship leaser that is, you know, straight up and to the right, it's, you want to like rationalize it in some way.
It's crazy, isn't it? But you know, one thing I would encourage folks to do is pull up a chart of Danaus Corp, DAC, and hit the five-year button. And you'll see that over 5 years, it's up 50 to 60% in 5 years. That's not that remarkable, right? And then, or hit like the max duration. And you can see that Danaus Corp's in public since 2006. You can see that, you know, since basically 2009 or so, the stock's basically flat since then. So what you were looking at, you know, last July, last August was extremely low valuations, extreme pessimism. The return is not so crazy when you zoom out a little bit and look at the big picture chart.
Right. Which is, you know, if you're going to base yourself on price, you can anchor yourself on any different range. And it's why,
exactly.
In theory, it's more important to focus on fundamentals. I believe that, in fact. But the one from fundamental that you mentioned, shipping stocks falling rates, which kind of makes sense, right? The rates are sort of the fundamentals along with the supply of ships and the new order book. And you cover all of those things in your article. But why was this the one that you wanted to come back to, the idea that shipping stocks follow rates? Why does this bother you or not ring true?
Yeah, well, you know, there's a lot of truth. Whenever there's a misconception, there's almost always truth to it too, right? I mean, it's kind of like stereotypes. Like there's a little bit of truth there, but it just gets exaggerated, right? And it gets to the point where it gets exaggerated so much it's offensive. And misconceptions are kind of like stereotypes. And, you know, shipping stocks are that way in a sense that dry bulk and tankers, which are probably the most popular shipping segments, you know, people think shipping, they think dry ships, right? Where they think like frontline and tankers. And those stocks are very short-term oriented, like 60-day voyages, 80-day voyages, 2-month, you know, and there's not as much long-term business there. So those stocks, those shipping stocks do follow rates big time. I mean, we have long positions in dry bulk and we might circle back if we have time. I don't know if we will today, but in dry bulk, the stocks do follow the rates. And in fact, you know, the future forward freight agreements were down a little bit this morning. The spot rates softened up month over month and the stocks are having a rough day this morning because they do follow the rates. Container ships are an industrial leasing business. Yes, they're assets that float. Yes, it's ships. But this is long-term 3, 4, 5, 6 year charter cover. This is a lot more in common with something like AerCap, which is like an airplane leasing business, or United Rentals, or even Caterpillar with miners, right? Caterpillar leases their mining equipment. And it has much more in common with that kind of business. So what really matters here is the long-term charter book, the quality of your counterparties, and basically your enterprise value to EBITDA. Those are the relevant metrics here. You know, your current spot rates, you know, for 60 or 90 days are kind of noise, are kind of like, you know, the fireworks you look at. And the reason I bring this up, Daniel, is because a big pushback I get from folks is they pull up something like the HARPEX and they say, we've been at all-time record highs for 3 or 4 weeks. It cannot possibly go higher. Well, they've been saying it can't possibly go higher since February. And, you know, like it's tripled since, you know, but, you know, it cannot go higher. And they're like, the second those rates turn down, these stocks are going to crash. You know, that's like what I hear. And okay, I mean, fair enough point. I get you. Like tankers, dry bulk, sure. So what I do in this article is I say, well, let's look at the last two times that the rates came off. And so I pull up two different time periods. I pull up 2005 to 2007, and I pull up 2011 to 2014. And these time periods are interesting because 2005 to 2007, the rates came off big time, but it was in the middle of what was undeniably a cyclical upturn. Like the rates were still very strong, but they just came off a little bit. 11 to 14 is the opposite of that, where not only did the rates come down, but we were undeniably in a cyclical downturn. So you have kind of like, it's worsening, but I like the big picture, to like, it's worsening and the big picture also sucks. So like two different areas we can look at. And in both times, Daniel, the Atlas Co., which was C-SPAN at the time, produced significantly strong positive returns over that time period. And Costa Maray, which was not public the first time, but was public the second time, produced significant positive returns, 150% total return between 2011 and 2014. While the rates are crashing, while the cyclical tide is running out, the stock returns 150% in like a terrible environment. So it's just not true. That's not what history shows us, and that's not how this industry operates. The container ship industry, tankers, bulkers, yes, look at the rates.
You mentioned in there AerCap, which is a stock I actually own a position in and I'm long. And
it that's just awkward.
No, I'm quite happy with the position, even if it's not quite the double every 3 months like Danaos. But the question is, interest rates, is that at all, because cost of capital is sort of a big thing. And what was so impressive about the aircraft lessors was that they were still able to access cheap capital even during the obvious pandemic period that was harsh on their end markets. I'm curious if the Fed, as we record this again on the 14th, the Fed is due to release their minutes in a couple of days. There's some talk about maybe it's time to really think about this transitory inflation, et cetera. Like, is rates at all an issue for Danaos and these other companies, or are they paying down debt and printing cash so fast that it doesn't really matter because they have stronger balance sheets?
That's a great question, Daniel. And yeah, for listeners, I actually didn't know Daniel was long. AerCap, quality firm, though. I've looked at it for many years. And Daniel, that's one stock I beat myself up on. I guess not. I shouldn't do it too hard because we did pretty good with shipping. But I should have also bought that one. Excellent business model. But anyways, to your question about interest rates and the impact, it depends on the company, right? There's 7 or 8 companies in the sector, so I don't want to paint with too broad of a brush. But specifically with the Danaos Corp, the short answer is no, not at all. The little bit longer answer to that is that the Danaos Corp has a handful of lease terms that are at fixed rates. They have unsecured debt due 2028, so 7 years from now, which is at fixed terms. And then they have a little bit of credit, you know, with the banks, which is at LIBOR plus like a margin. So that's floating, right? But that's a very small part of their capital structure. And they've been repaying that. And also, I can't speak exactly to the latest hedge book because it always changes, right? But these companies usually hedge that debt. They do what's called a fixed to floating swaps, where they swap out that floating component and basically turn it into a multi-year fixed component. So yeah, there's very little risk in the short to medium term on rising interest rates, because first of all, most of the debt's fixed. And then second of all, I think more importantly, is that the balance sheets are the best they've ever been. We're talking debt to assets of 20 to 30% on average, when historically they were 60 or 70% or 80% levered. So that's not really a factor anymore. Now, one question I get a lot is, how does inflation play into this business? Now, I'm not personally, we'll have to look back in a year and see how this plays out, but I'm not personally a big proponent of like hyperinflation. Like, I don't really buy that thesis necessarily. But if you are a proponent of hyperinflation or just very large inflation, like, I don't know, 8 or 9, 10% for multi-year, that's going to help the shipping companies because all their assets have steel values and they're basically commodities, and they're all going to rise up along with inflation. They might even outpace inflation because there's like a commodity multiplier there. And at the same time, their debt costs are all fixed. And so the real value of their debt goes down. So you have assets going up, you have debt going down, and your net asset value, like the equity value, kind of explodes, right? Because it's the difference between the two. So it explodes upwards. So, I don't really believe personally in hyperinflation, but if I did, I would be buying the hell out of shipping stocks. I'd be loading the wagons with this stuff if I was really into that. That's not why I'm buying it. I'm buying it for fundamental reasons, for earnings and cash flows. But inflation is a tailwind, if anything. If anything, Daniel, that I don't want to look too much into negatives in a wrong way, but if anything, I would be more concerned if interest rates were zero to negative for another decade. I think that's a bigger risk to shipping than higher interest.
Interesting. Okay. So I mentioned earlier, and it's come up in your talk too, the sort of time horizon, the cycle here, the feeling of where it peak cycle and how long this goes. You mentioned that they're locking in contracts for a few years. I guess, how do you think about valuation here from the perspective of, not to get too nerdy, but it seems like a terminal value would be harder to peg down for a company that's as cyclical as some of these companies are. Is it all how much money they can take out of the business and get back to shareholders? Or how do you think about the return? Or do you think that we're set up for a long period of success where it doesn't matter? How do you sort of get your head around that? Because that to me also seems like the lingering doubt that people would have looking at this is, again, sort of where we started. I've missed this move, and how can I really trust that it'll stick?
I mean, that's kind of the million-dollar question there is how long will this bull cycle play out? And just to remind folks about the misconception with the rates, the HARPEX, the rates could pull back in a couple months. And that doesn't mean the bullish upturn, the cyclical upturn's done, right? That just means the rates are volatile. And that's what happened if you go back again and look at a chart from, 2001 to 2008, you'll see lots of spikes and pullbacks. But it was a seven-year bullish, cyclical upturn. So I don't know. I wouldn't go around saying it's going to be 5 or 6 or 7 years. I don't think that's I don't think it's responsible to say that or to believe it. I mean, I hope, that'd be nice to happen. But I think, realistically, 2022 is looking even stronger than this year in terms of there's basically no new supply hitting the water, and global demand is expected to increase year over year significantly, especially in like Q1, Q2. And so 22 looks even better than 21. 23 is where things start to get a little bit more balanced. And then 2024 is where I start to have some concern. First of all, it's really hard to forecast things 2 or 3 years in advance. I mean, dude, hell, Daniel, I mean, in shipping, it's hard to forecast things 2 or 3 months in advance. So, I mean, three years is a tall order, but I'm concerned, I would say, about 2024. I think that year is really on the balance. And it's really on the balance with the order book. You have to watch the ships these companies are ordering. And look, I mentioned that during the 2006, 2007, the order book was like 60% of the fleet. Right now it's 17%. So, or 17.5%. So we're nowhere near those levels. But, I think 17% is pretty healthy to maximize of what I'd like to see. I'd like to see like 5%, Daniel, but right, the lower the better, right? But I think 17% is reasonable. It's healthy, but I think 2024 is kind of where I have concerns. So to circle back to your initial question about how do I value and model these companies, look, I use multiple methods, but I think the most bearish method you could use would be a net present value of guaranteed cash flows, right? Like you just take every ship that's already fixed on charters or is about to be fixed, right? Like if it's coming up in like 2 months, right? We can probably agree that those are going to be fixed. So we look at all those ships that are fixed and we plot out their guaranteed cash flows. And Danaos Corp, just a couple of weeks ago, signed two vessels from April of 2022 through early 2026. So not only are those 4-year charters, they don't even deliver to the customer until March or April of next year. I mean, think about that. Like the charter liner, the liner company is so desperate for tonnage that they're willing to buy the ship 8 months or 9 months in advance for 4 years. Yeah. Like, it's crazy. And so with that vessel, Daniel, I can chart out the cash flow from 2022, from 2023, from 2025, all the way into like March or April of 2026. And I can do like a net present value. You know, I can use a 10% discount value, or I can use 15% discount value. And then I can say worst case, I mean, like utter cataclysm, like total cyclical downturn, that vessel gets demolished in 2026 and it heads to the scrapyard. That's like the worst case. It's like a liquidation model of the business. I can run that sort of model into Nowes Corp today, and it is basically mathematically impossible to come up with a valuation below 70s per share in the most bearish model imaginable, which is just you finish the charters you already have, and then you demolish the fleet and you liquidate the company. And it's like in the 70s. I mean, it's pretty impressive, pretty incredible. The risk reward on this thing is it doesn't mean it can't go down. Like, don't get me wrong. Like stocks can always go up, stocks can always go down. A price is just what buyers and sellers agree on. I mean, this thing could be down next month. I don't know that for sure, but I'm telling you fundamentally, like how to value this company, the worst case valuation model is in the 70s.
That's the right way to think about things, whether, you know, without x-raying your work to stress test the valuation as much as you can. And if it comes out that way, it's certainly eye-catching. Let's get a bottom line sort of on the container ships, I think, unless there's anything else you want to hit. And what do you like the most? I mean, you mentioned Danaos and GSL. Is that, should we just keep it simple? Are those the names that you're most excited to talk about, or anything else stand out to you from the sector right now that you're really watching and eager about?
Well, you know, it's almost easier to disclose the names I don't have a position in because I'm bullish on so many of them. But I think it just depends on your viewpoint. Are you an individual investor that's looking for like the best risk reward? Are you an institutional investor? Are you an income investor that wants big dividends? I think if you like a bigger dividend yield, I think Global Ship Lease, GSL, is probably the best one. I think they're the most likely to have large dividends and continued increases. Danaos Corp has a sizable dividend, but I think Global Ship Lease has a higher yield today. I'd have to look it up, but I think it's a couple percent higher. And I've spoke with GSL management, and they seem very attuned to raising that yield even higher. Let's talk real quick about GSL's dividend. So they had a dividend in the past, big dividend payer, but they were in a multi-year cyclical downturn. And in Q3 of 2015, I actually wrote a short report on them, Daniel, back in 2015. I was like, this is an overpriced yield stock. It's garbage. Get out. You know. And they had to cut their dividend, and the stock collapsed. And they didn't pay a dividend for 6 years because they couldn't. The markets were bad. Well, they brought it back in early 21. They said, we're going to do 12 cents a quarter. That was our first dividend. We're really proud of ourselves, patting ourselves on the back. We brought it back, folks. We fulfilled a promise, right? And 2 months later, they haven't even paid the 12 cents yet because they just announced it. And they're like, I'm sorry, folks, the markets are so damn good, we're going to raise it to 25 cents a quarter. Like, before they even paid it, they doubled it. And that's how crazy things are. And I think they're going to keep doing that. I don't know if they're going to double it next time, but I think we'll probably see another raise by the end of the year. I think they'll raise 25 cents even higher. I don't know to what, but I think there'll be another raise. So long-winded, but if you're income folks, I think Global Ship Lease is the winner. If you're risk reward folks, I think Danaos Corp is the winner. And I think if you're institutional, you're listening on the phone today and you manage a fund or something, I think Atlas Corp, I'm very long this company as well. ATCO is kind of the institutional play because it's 40% owned by Prem Watsa, Fairfax. And this company has solid 15 to 20 year industrial quality charters with the major liners. This is literally the air cap of the seas, Daniel. You'll like that one.
Okay. My ears perked up. I don't know if I'm institutional, but my ears perked up.
Well, you like AirCap. So if you like AirCap, Atlas Corp, ATCO, used to be called C-SPAN for the original folks on here. That is basically the floating version of AirCap. It's an industrial leasing company. It's not even really shipping.
Okay. Got it. So it's a very, very much, I mean, it's a financial company is sort of the way to think about that. It's really
exactly. And that's most of these shipping companies on the container ship side are financial companies. They're not really, they're shipping because they, but that's like saying Air Corp is like an airline, you know, like it's not quite, it's really a financial corporation.
Right. Financial corporation with exposure to a given sector. I mean,
exactly. That's right.
So what are you most concerned about at this point? You mentioned the 2024 order book. Like, is there anything when you look at this trade at this point that you're sweating over or anything that you're most worried about?
Well, you know, I naturally run a little hot, so I might be sweating here as we're talking. I don't know. but I think my largest concerns, and they're very legitimate concerns, I think are on a global macro sort of sense. Right. I look at this thing and I'm a value investor by heart. I mean, you mentioned when I first started on Seeking Alpha, I was talking about Walmart and Microsoft and Intel and Best Buy. And I'm a value guy. And we've been in, it's been a protracted one. It hasn't been like a huge boom, but we've been in like an 11-year, 12-year like bull run upturn kind of thing. And we've had, you know, ZERP and NERP, right? Zero interest rates and negative interest rate policy for like 5 or 6 years. And, you know, I'm concerned that if we have a major global recession or something around the corner in 22 or 23, I hope not. But if we do, you know, these companies are going to fall. You know, the stocks are going to crash and Danaos Corp will probably be below my $70 case if we have a global recession. But the entire global stock market is going to crash in that circumstance. So that's what keeps me awake at night, Daniel. And so most of my hedges are market hedges. Like I have a couple of companies I'm shorting, and then I have, like, for example, I have SPY puts, you know, SPY index puts. I have things like that as hedges. That's what concerns me the most. So not so much shipping stuff, but more so global macro, you know, a new version of COVID or, you know, US-China trade war or something like that is much more of a concern to me.
Got it. Okay. In theory, value is having a moment, and you could argue that value in a economic downturn is a safer place to be, but obviously it's not as simple as that. And most things will go down no matter what. So,
right. So don't buy the, and again, not investment advice. I can't give you allocation advice, but never buy, don't buy these stocks on margin. Don't get overextended. I mean, I use options sometimes to add a little leverage, but just be careful with that kind of stuff because your business can do really, really well and your stock can still go down. So just be responsible out there. And I think that's the way to play it.
Hopefully people have learned that even if the market continues to give us weird moves and weird stocks that are doing well. So before we wrap, anything else sort of on your plate at Value Investor's Edge, anything else that you guys are following or anything you're excited about? Or has it been, I mean, given the setup, you sound pretty bulled up on container ships, so maybe it's not worth finding other baskets, but what else are you guys looking at?
Yeah, well, container ships is the fun one because we're riding the wave or we're on our surfboards riding the wave of cash flows and we're harvesting and we're enjoying the dividends. And, you know, that's a fun one to talk about. We're running low on time today. So I guess I just a quick shout to the sectors. Dry bulk is, I'm trading dry bulk a lot. I am bullish into 2022. I think the order book is at all-time record lows and it's very interesting, very attractive. But mostly with the stocks, I'm long a handful. I won't get into all those because, you know, disclosures and all that, but I'm long a handful of them. And I think they're excellent trades, but I don't have the same risk reward viewpoints. Because like if the rates go down, the stocks are going to go down. If the rates go up, the stocks go up. Like it's kind of a trade. Tankers are, bottoming out big time. It's been a rough year. Some optimism for late 21, but really I think it's more of a 2022 story. And then the gas markets, long-term bullish on both LNG and LPG. But those right now, I think you stick to quality companies and you look for the good management teams and you're more selective in that way. I think container ships stand out because of the risk reward nature of the business. That's what makes them so interesting to me because it's not just some sort of like quick trade. It's actually like a legitimate multi-year investment.
Good review there of the sectors. So Jay, any last thoughts on shipping in general on the market or any closing notes here?
Not that much, Daniel. I really appreciate you having me on today. I think one little note that you mentioned is that value is indeed having its moment. And value's been down and beaten down compared to growth for most of the last 10 to 15 years. So values, yes, it has its moment, but it's only been a 6-month, 8-month moment. So if there's any sort of long, you know, multi-year reversion, I think value investors like ourselves are going to be in for a hell of a ride. So, you know, fingers crossed that value reversion happens before any sort of like global macro problems. I guess that'd be like the icing on the cake, if you will. But no, thanks again for having me on. And it's always good to chat with you.
Yeah, we're attuned as value investors to assuming the worst, but maybe we'll allow ourselves some hope this time. But yeah, Jay, it's been a pleasure. And congrats on how this is playing out for you. That's really, you know, it's nice to see the fundamentals and the analysis line up with what's happening in the markets. So I think to wrap for disclosures, just for people listening, I think I disclosed that AirCap position. I think you have ZIM, DAC, NMM, GSL, and ATCO. Is that right? Anything?
That's correct. That's you hit all the stocks we're talking about. I also have some dry bulk positions, but since we didn't name tickers, I won't get into that. Just keep in mind again, folks, 14 June 2021. So like I have, you know, June expiration options, I have July options, August options. So like, you know, I do housekeeping and monthly rolls and stuff like that. So just keep in mind I have trades on these names. And if you're listening to this recording in like a month or two, just make sure you look, you know, ask me if you're unsure, you know, tweet at me or something. I'll hit you up with the latest disclosures. I just don't want you to think that, you know, it's in August or something and we're, you know, this is June 14th.
Positions can and will change for sure.
Exactly. Exactly.
You can find Jay on Seeking Alpha. Jay Mintzmyer is the author name, Jay's name, Mintzmyer. Value Investors Edge is the marketplace service. Also on Twitter, I think at Mintzmyer. Is that right, Jay?
That's correct. And we also launched a YouTube channel a couple months ago where I have some interviews and webinars. And we'll probably post this whenever this podcast comes out. We'll probably get that on our YouTube as well.
Very cool. All right, Jay, thanks so much. Keep up the great work and best of luck to you as this wave keeps cresting.
Excellent. Thanks again, Daniel.